Two women, $15,000. One swimsuit made from recycled plastic bottles. That's how lingerie started. No splashy launch, no VC funding, no trend chasing. Just a single product they believed was perfect.
We were actually inspired by like Swell water bottles, where it was like a single SKU product. I haven't really seen many single SKU companies come to life before. And we were like, let's just make one product that we think is absolutely perfect.
While most brands expand fast and wide, Ainsley Rode and Hannah Todd did the opposite. They launched with constraint. One SKU, no overseas production, and a relentless focus on quality. The result? A climate-first cult brand growing at 300% year over year.
I'm not here just to sell shit to you. I'm here because I think what we do really matters. I think I can support you in feeling really confident. I think I can support you in feeling really beautiful. And I think I can do that better than most can.
Welcome to The Capitalist Hippie, the podcast where we challenge the old rules of business to build something better. I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert, entrepreneur, and lover of bold, sustainable ideas. Every week, we dive into data-backed insights, groundbreaking ideas, and real-world strategies that help you outthink and outmaneuver the status quo. In this episode, I sit down with Ainsley Rose, CEO and co-founder of Lingerie, to unpack what it really takes to build with discipline and why doing less better can still scale. From turning plastic waste into sellout products to using email lists over algorithms, this is a story about honesty, focus, and long-term thinking.
I would rather somebody buy less overall because A, that matters to me, but B, because I think that you build a relationship of trust.
This is what it looks like to build something better on purpose. Let's get into it. Ainsley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Marco. I'm so excited to talk.
So I want to talk a little bit first, really, if you could take us kind of behind the scenes. It's a really obviously inspiring story of how you started, you bootstrapped it, your business. But what was the original business idea? I read you're sitting on a beach and you kind of have this idea, but like entrepreneurs always have lots of ideas. Like, what was the original idea for the business?
So my co-founder and I, we were sitting on a beach in Mexico. We'd had a couple of margaritas and we were like, what problems do we want to solve? And I was traveling around the world at the time, working as a photographer and using swimsuits through and through, carry on only, trying to live a very minimalist life. And I was like, swimsuits suck. They're poor quality. They're really flimsy. They don't make you feel comfortable in your body the way other clothes can really inspire confidence. And when I started looking into it further with my co-founder, we learned that swimsuits are made from non-regenerative fossil fuel. And when we started working on this, we're like, well, we don't want to be supporting the fossil fuel industry. We need to create something better. And then we got to work and we didn't know anything. We Googled everything. That was the secret sauce, was Google.
Oh, amazing. Because it seems like to go from, you know, swimsuits kind of suck. They're based off of fossil fuels. What was your first kind of idea? Was it just like, oh, we're going to find some natural materials and let's just see if we can do it? Like, what was that first kind of next step after Google?
We were actually inspired by like Swell water bottles, where it was like a single SKU product. I haven't really seen many single SKU companies come to life before. And we were like, let's just make one product that we think is absolutely perfect. So we designed this one piece. It's called the Minimalist in Black and White. It works really well as a bodysuit. So if you're packing for a trip, it's like the kind of the one only thing that you need to bring. And we started just narrowing in only on that product. And we launched with just that product and only sold that one single SKU in black and white for the first year and a half or so before we even delved into other products. And I'm so grateful for that because it gave us an opportunity to truly discover product market fit and make sure that like the other sides of the business were able to get dialed in. And it also gave us like a cult following because we were so clear on what mattered to us through this one product instead of trying to like delve into a bunch of things and do them imperfectly.
Yeah. By going kind of with that one SKU that allowed you to minimize obviously the investment, how did you get this you know, started? Was this bootstrapped? Was it, did you find a grant money, or like, how did you get that first kind of that product out? Because I'm assuming if you're trying to go outside of a norm for materials, that's going to be harder, more costly.
We had no money. So my co-founder and I were roommates. We developed everything on our kitchen floor together. And then we borrowed $15,000 from a friend. And that's what we used to start the business and do like our first production run. $15,000 to two 26-year-olds sounded like a lot of money. As it turns out, it is not a lot of money. So we had to get really, really scrappy and get very comfortable accepting help and asking for help. So we were like the first people to go to every entrepreneur that I knew. We would go and take them for coffee and ask them questions and ask for connections. And that's truly like that support from other entrepreneurs is what helped us build the business.
When you started building this, you launched this, how was it received? Was it people were like, this is great? Like, how did you position it? And how did you, like, did you start selling them, or was it kind of like crickets once you put the website up? How did you get that first interest?
It wasn't crickets, which was good. When we got, I think we got our first order, like our first day that we started our Instagram. And then slowly from there, it did build up very organically. We got some interest from like celebrities and local media because what we were doing was quite different. And we were so crystal clear on our values that it was attractive. Like, it's attractive to people when you are so authentic in what you do and you clearly care so much about what you do. So I think when you talk about finding product market fit, like, it should be obvious. And we've seen that with other products too that we launch, where you can tell quickly if like you've nailed it, or if you maybe need to take a step back and like see, play around and fiddle with your different variables.
Yeah. So we've had quite a few businesses that have been focused on the fashion industry in terms of just the issue at hand is that we make way too much clothes. Often, like you said, they're derived from, you know, fossil fuel industry. They're use crazy amounts of water to produce them, and then people will wear them kind of once, and then we have this fashion industry that's quite notorious for that. How bad was it also in the swimwear industry? I'm assuming it's kind of the similar kind of big core problem in terms of the swimsuit industry.
Yeah, it's the same big core problem, and the swimsuit industry is extra difficult because swimsuits need to be used in salt water and chlorine, which is so abrasive on material. And you also want your product to be really functional. Like, it needs to be quick drying. It needs to be comfortable to be wearing in like a really athletic setting. It needs to make you feel really good in your body. It needs to like last beautifully, even after being worn for like 7 years in the most challenging environments for material. So with that being said, what we've found so far is that you can only really use a synthetic material to be high quality enough in those environments. We launched a material made from beans, like literal beans. But it still is like a lot, it's a lot of processing to make a material from beans that would work in like salt water and stuff. Yeah. It's absolutely a polluting industry, and that's why we wanted to come in there and not be like this. When you buy 20 swimsuits from Shein, that was like the opposite of what we wanted to be, is to prove that you could just buy one thing and feel so good in that one thing for years and years and years. You can consume way less overall.
Yeah. And so you started with a bean. Where did that kind of evolve in terms of that, because you have obviously these values around, you know, one, this needs to feel amazing. It needs to be good quality, so you don't need as many. But also the material that we use is really important because we don't want it to be made from this fossil fuel industry. So like, where did you kind of go from bean to wear in terms of material?
Well, we actually, it is mostly made from recycled plastic, and we have like some small items coming out that are made from beans. So we use recycled plastic as our primary material, and that's because there's so much plastic to be recycled right now. There's truly a staggering amount of plastic, and so our goal is that one day there are no plastic bottles, and then we're using different alternatives that are still in the works right now. that's kind of where like where things are at in that industry. But we're also investing in like other materials for like different trims and stuff, like padding and whatever. Yeah.
And when you say you're investing in that, you're investing in potentially using materials that people are kind of developing right now, which was there's lots of developments right now on better usage. How does this happen in terms of recycling into a material? Plastic bottles, like, you know, obviously it gets collected, it goes through a processing thing. Like, how does that process work? And I'm guessing it's just kind of reusing it so that it's back into the supply chain. But how do you get the better quality product also?
Oh, such a good question, because not all sustainable materials are created equally. So for us, the bottles are collected off beaches and streets. It's all BPA free plastic. And then it gets broken down into chips. The chips get broken down. They get spun into fibers that get spun into strings, which become yarn, which eventually gets woven into material. We use a finishing treatment called Cheeto Sante, which helps to soften the material and makes it more comfortable, wear longer, and decreases microplastic release because it decreases the amount of friction on the product. And then for us, it's all about like full circle sustainability, which means that like this needs to be the best material and not just the most sustainable material, because you should never buy something because it's sustainable. Like that's the worst reason to buy something. You should buy something because you need it and you think it's going to last for a long time.
This is such an important distinction, because if we're just buying sustainable stuff we don't need, it still ends up being waste. The real shift isn't just materials, it's our mindset. The product has to earn its place in someone's life through performance, durability, and relevance. That's how sustainability becomes more than a selling point. It becomes a business advantage.
So ensuring that like the quality was top, that goes above everything, because that's like the core of what you're creating. And the end of life of product is important as well. So we do recycling for the end of your suit's life. So eventually your beautiful, sexy swimsuit will become a carpet.
All of that sounds hard. All of that sounds more expensive than the normal traditional method. Why did you think that the harder, because putting kind of purpose and putting that into your values as a company is usually more work. It costs you potentially more money. And so a lot of people are always worried about the output. Like, is this going to be better for us? So you have, I'm guessing, a higher price point, material cost than others. How did you kind of potentially know that consumers wanted that, or they cared, or did they care more so about just the finished product?
I mean, I think consumers care first and foremost about the finished product. And I agree with that standpoint. I think that that's a really smart way to be purchasing. And I think it's up to companies who have power and who have money to be investing in creating a better future. And for me, as a creator and as a business owner, I'm not just here on this planet to make money. Like, there's so many ways that you can make money. I'm here on this planet because I want to create a better future for my kids and for myself. And I think it makes it a lot easier, even though it's more expensive, it makes it a lot easier for me as a business owner to keep my drive and to inspire my team and keep them excited about doing something that actually matters, and that you can feel like you can go to bed and be like, you know what, this was worth it for me.
Yeah. And how hard is it, or how difficult is it, to tap into recycled plastic bottles as a material? Like, I think some people immediately be like, oh, this is way too hard to do this. This is more moving pieces and parts. And or is the supply chain now so strong that it is pretty easy to tap into these sources now?
So at the time, it was really, really difficult. And now I think it's easier. But I guess kind of the caveat on that is that at the end of the day, virgin materials are cheaper. So it's just more expensive, but it's still accessible. And I think that you can really clearly see the benefit to using that, not just, and it's also like, yes, of course, what I was saying about how this is what matters to me and it's easier for me to run a business in that way. But you can see that consumers also, it gives them the chance to talk about something that matters to them. It's one thing to be like, Where's your swimsuit from? Oh, it's from Shein. So I should stop slagging Shein so much. But anyways.
It's no, that's X, fine. It's X, that's whatever fine.
Company that I don't like their values. Versus, oh, we bought it from this brand. That's, you know, planting. We grew 3 coral reefs. We make our material, our swimsuits are made using the least water possible in a recycled fashion, blah, blah, blah. So it really gives customers the opportunity to spread word of mouth as well, which is another reason why I would encourage it in what you're saying about, like, it's not just about profit, like purpose and profit go together.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into that on the consumer side. But first, from the product side, where did you start getting this, you know, your products made? Was this done overseas, or where was this done?
Okay, well, I originally wanted to get them made in Bali. And it was a huge disaster. I went down there for 3 weeks to try and like set up a factory relationship. And yeah. I walked away with, I was at the airport at 2 a.m. waiting for them to show up with our samples after a week of like trying to chase them down. And they stole our samples. They stole our material. And I went back on a plane empty handed with food poisoning. It was like the worst experience ever. And this was like both pre-launch when we didn't know, like, we didn't know what this was going to be. Like, we had no idea what we were creating. But it all worked out because it brought us back to Vancouver, where we produce domestically. And we still do produce some of our products domestically. But being able at the beginning of having a business to really be able to keep a close eye on things physically really set us up for an advantage. Like, being able to go into our factories ourselves, pick up our product ourselves, ship it ourselves, gave us the chance to fully understand the business. And now when we hire people, I understand their job deeply.
Yeah, because you've been involved in all the different processes. So you had your initial $15,000 potentially trying to do it in Bali, now in Vancouver. That's, I'm assuming, sold quite well. You got lots of consumer feedback on the product. What was that next stage of growth for you? Did you have to get, you know, extra funding, or like how did you kind of build the business?
So we started organically, and our marketing was only organic for the first, I want to say 3 years, was all just word of mouth, and working with media and influencers who we had a deep connection with. And it was because our product was so different and is so different that it was really easy to just connect with people in that way. Eventually, we were growing 300% year over year. So we were like just skyrocketing. And the cost of our inventory relative to how fast we were growing became impossible for us to keep up with. So we took a loan from BDC, which I love BDC. They're an incredible organization. And that was really able to help us. And we went on Dragon's Den and we did secure a deal, but on the show, but then we ended up down the road being like, this is should be different than what we talked about on the show. But yeah, basically just BDC.
Yeah, wow. And that's held true the entire time, because if you didn't close the Dragon's Den one, that means that it's still all owner with loans to grow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is amazing. Why do you think the marketing worked, and why do you think you were growing so quickly? Was it that the product was so different? Do you think it was maybe a combination of both the product as well as kind of the storyline? Because I think a lot of founders, especially people that are thinking about kind of purpose, sustainability, kind of core values when it kind of comes to these type of things, really have a hard time. You made the distinction already. You kind of made the distinction that, like, it has to be a really, really great product. And I think often, you know, I think there was a stat that like 46% of marketing, when it's something that is involved with sustainability or climate, they market the sustainability side. And it's like, well, does a consumer really care as much? So how do you think about all of that?
That's a big conversation that I have all the time and think about, because I personally care so much about sustainability, and it's become really like the driving force behind what I do. But sometimes I find that if we don't speak to it in a simple enough way, people don't really get it, or they don't want to talk about it, or they don't want to share it. So for those of you who are working on like creating a sustainable business, I think it's really important that you simplify your messaging as much as possible. Like, really keep things tight.
It's easy to fall into the trap of thinking complexity signals credibility. But if your climate message needs a PhD to decode, it's not going to land. People won't share it, remember it, or act on it. That's not a values problem, it's a communication problem.
We've worked on initiatives where, for example, we did an initiative where we were like, if you spend $150, we're going to plant a baby coral for you. First off, you don't plant a baby coral, you propagate it. But you can't, but for us, using the word propagate, it's like suddenly you're losing people because they're like, what do you mean you propagate it? Then you have to explain propagation. We can't do that. And so using that like really simple messaging, it has been really effective for us versus we've done other initiatives where, for example, we planted, I think it was 750, I'll have to look back at the number, but water cleaning willow trees in an indigenous community that was having a water crisis. And what the trees did is like they went towards the bottom of the water source. They were able to clean up the water source and make it so that the water that came out was clean enough to be filtered, like properly cleaned. That is way too much information for a consumer to understand from a swimsuit company like ours. And that initiative kind of flopped, unfortunately. Like we were thrilled. We were so excited about it, but it didn't grab people the way more digestible, quick initiatives or that we've done.
Yeah. So a lot of the core consumer pieces is one, they do care. They care about what does the business do. It's the reason why Patagonia has grown to such a big organization.
Totally.
People at the core care, but also people like to put a Patagonia jacket on.
Exactly. Know,
they want it to last. They love the fact that it's going to be repaired into the future. But at its core, the product is really, which is really, really great. So when you think about kind of growth, you know, organic is amazing, right? You know, you could, and it's really cool to do that through media partnerships, social media, because obviously this is a visual product and then people want to buy it and try it and like to share it. How do you continue to grow now? Is it still through that organic means or like what's the strategy now that on the marketing side?
Organic is still really crucial for us. And something that we've found is that it's not about like the money that you spend on it. We've done shoots that are like higher production value that cost a lot more. But what actually matters is how clearly you can speak to the value that you're providing for other people. And you can, the great news is like you can do that so easily. Everybody has a phone, you just can speak to your phone about what you're creating. And that seems to be what's really driving things forward for us. So organic is still, you know, the number one driver of our revenue. However, if you're working on starting something right now, or if you've got something that you're currently on, I would really encourage you to really focus on your email list.
Owned audiences are the real growth engine. With email, you don't have to optimize for the algorithm. You just have to show up consistently and honestly. It's one of the few places where you set the rules and see the return.
Our email list is our second biggest driver of revenue. And it's my favorite driver of revenue because it's like ours. You know, there's no like there's no social media platform that's going to go down or demote us or whatever. This is like our relationship with our customers where we can be as honest as we want to.
Yeah. And how important is that like kind of relationship, honesty, storytelling to articulate that kind of brand message to your customers?
For us, it's everything. Like for us, that's like our number one thing that matters to us is like how can we be as transparent as possible with our community? And it's like all relationships. It's like you build it up from your vulnerability. You build it up from being true to yourself and showing up as who you are. Like we think about our relationship with our customers and our creators as like dating. Like you need to show up. Like obviously you're going to wear your best outfit on your first date. You're going to show up trying to present well, but you're also going to show up trying to be who you really are because quickly people are going to realize if you're not who you really are and then you're going to get ghosted. We don't want to get ghosted. So we're just going to show up as being ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you're saying, you know, growth numbers of 300% year over year. you've taken loans to help kind of with that cash flow because of inventory and growth, which makes complete sense. Why have you not taken outside capital with kind of growth numbers like this, consumers that love the product, a storyline and a product that has a lot of meaning? Have you been approached by those options? Because there's lots of competitors, right? And there's lots of big, you know, big competitors that are in the space. How do you see that or think about that?
I mean, it's certainly something we would consider, like for the right partner who we felt we mm-hmm. had really clear value alignment and really clear shared vision with. We definitely consider it, and we have been approached before, but we've been doing great on our own. We were like, we don't need this. Yeah. And then I've also found that like we encountered like some really big challenges a couple of years ago in the business. There was like quite a few different sort of factors that created a perfect storm. Like our COGS started going up, our shipping started going up, and all these incremental creeps we didn't fully notice until it was like getting to be too late. And at that time, like, we were really happy that it was just us because we had to solve that problem ourselves. We didn't have like somebody else here to sort of bail us out. And that's made the business so much stronger and really allowed us to like make sure the foundation of the business is like super, super strong before doing anything too complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense. You have the flexibility to kind of grow on your own terms. And I get it. I'm in a business that's the same kind of scenario too, where if you can find the funding that you don't have to give away your business, that's great. And venture is great as well. There's lots of places
totally.
Where it makes complete sense. Have you noticed competitors in the space that are just kind of more of your traditional commerce companies thinking about, you know, the way that you have built your business and structured it? Have you seen new kind of competitors, or have you seen the market start to change a little bit, or in general it's still kind of very, very similar?
We spend almost no time thinking about competitors. we don't really think about it. Like, I think that it's like in life, you know, like you can look at the beautiful person beside you and go, oh, like they're so funny and they have all of this to offer. That's great. And then it makes you reflect on yourself and go, oh, am I as pretty? Am I as funny? Am I as whatever? And like, if you're just being yourself, it doesn't matter because they are going to do their best as themselves and we're going to do our best as ourselves.
This is the kind of clarity most founders chase for years. When you stop reacting to what others are doing, you start building what only you can do. Because competitors come and go, but the values last.
We're here for the long term. Like, this isn't a short-sighted plan for us. Like, I think it would be amazing if laundry existed in 100 years from now. So thinking about our competition is like thinking about the most temporary problem when all I care about is like our big picture problems.
Yeah. And what does that kind of vision look like in the kind of the next 3 to 5 years? Where do you want to take the business?
So like, as you can, I guess we're talking to me, we run our business really differently at Laundry. We think about creativity differently. The way that we manage our team is very free. Like, I really like to keep our team feeling like they are in the driver's seat of their own job, and like we don't micromanage, probably maybe not enough, like we should micromanage more, but we run the business quite differently, and I think that like at the end of the day, like in the next 5 years, I think we're kind of where Skims and Patagonia intersect. Like, I feel like there's this female consumer or woman consumer who is very driven towards caring about what they purchase, but they also want to feel confident and beautiful. And that's where we absolutely kill it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you built, I don't know, you'd almost say like a kind of a cult like following of customers. Like, they, you know, they have that, they love to kind of talk about it. And if I think about Patagonia, the comment there, and you also say that, you know, you encourage people buy less, be more mindful, which is kind of a, you know, a paradox for a CEO that's like buy more and grow. How do you balance that?
It's because it's a long-term idea. Like, I would rather somebody buy less overall, and because A, that matters to me, but B, because I think that you build a relationship of trust. Like, I'm not here just to sell shit to you. I'm here because I think what we do really matters. I think I can support you in feeling really confident. I think I can support you in feeling really beautiful. And I think I can do that better than most can. And so I think it's just like, it's just about being honest. And I think when you're honest with people, it really builds a foundational relationship that lasts longer than if you just do short-term thinking and are just like, bye, 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 bye. We were talking tons about Swim, which is great, but we launched Lounge, and our Lounge is good product market fit. We're seeing it like really pop off. When we first launched, we sold out of our first, we always do like a really small production run, but we sold out in like a week, and we were so nervous to launch Lounge. It's like so different from our current offering, but our products are cooling, so that when you sleep in them, like you're not going to be like a sweaty sleeper. You'll feel really comfortable, and they're also like you can sleep in it or wear it, you know, on the plane or wear it out. So we're really excited about that.
So you do these kind of small runs is that often to just kind of your audience that you have via email and just kind of test it that way? Because it seems like, you know, the natural way to do it is like pour a whole bunch of money in research, pour a whole bunch of money in development, bring in a bunch of SKUs and products, and then kind of do a big reveal. But you take a bit of a different approach to launching products.
Yeah, that's true. And like we do, unfortunately, we do spend a lot of money on development, but we'd rather just do a small run and not have to deal with a bunch of wastage and stuff. Like we really try and keep things tight from the jump and focus more on selling to our email list, who we know are like really driven clients of ours, who are really loyal clients of ours first, and then bring things out there more for the greater public once we understand that this product is clearly like a need for people.
André Swimwear didn't scale by doing more. They scaled by doing less, better. From launching with a single SKU to recycling over 1 million plastic bottles, Ainsley and her team built a brand rooted in purpose. They proved that trust isn't just a marketing tactic, it's the foundation. And that showing up honestly, again and again, is what builds something that lasts. I'm inspired by my conversation with Ainsley about how Laundry is winning with intention, especially when the rest of the world is chasing more. Thanks for listening to The Capitalist Hippie. If you enjoy this episode, share it with someone building with purpose. See you next time.